Juno Afternoon made possible with support from Hanson Gress, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. And next, we're going to meet the authors of a brand new book called When You're Not There. And we're going to discuss some end-of-life care with Hal Geiger and Ginny Palmer, who've joined me in the studio. Thanks to both of you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having us, Andrew.
Yeah. Well, so tell me a little bit. You said this is the second edition, sort of, or the second book that you've written, talking a little bit about end-of-life care and some of the challenges and issues.
Yeah, didn't the first – I think the first one came out in
2009, I think.
Oh, okay.
And the – yeah, and that was written when both Hal and I were part of the Foundation of End-of-Life Care. And it was at a time when my husband had passed, and I was just driven, and Hal was just a godsend because he really marshaled me through a lot of it and edited for me and was really great.
And how did y'all meet and start that collaboration?
Well, that's kind of how we met. Dr. Urata got me on the board of the Foundation for End-of-Life Care when Jenny was president, and she had this vision, and she'd talked about it quite a bit, and I was very intrigued, but she had all these ideas, and we ended up working together to try to just take them from ideas to actually get them on paper and getting a draft together. And then as Peter Radick down in Oregon designed the book, I think he did a great job. It was Jenny's ideas that were just flowing out of her after her husband died, because a lot of it was things that she wished she knew, I think, beforehand.
Yeah. What were some of the main things that you know, we, those of us who haven't gone through that real process of thinking about that, wouldn't necessarily know about?
I think some of the main things was, and what I shared with you earlier, was that with husbands and wives, they have a separation in their life usually. And the wife usually knows social security numbers, which you need to file a death certificate. And she knows the numbers. The husband doesn't have a clue. And a lot of times
he might know his if he's lucky.
And he doesn't even know where to look it up.
Right. Well, I at least know where to look, even though I don't know my wife's social security number. So I know where to look for her birthday and all kinds of things.
Right.
And I had so many people that talked to me when this started to happen. Some stories that were really funny in a lot of ways, but then some of them were really tragic. And there was a young woman coming up from Branson, Missouri, home with her husband and two children in the back seat, and they had an automobile crash, and her husband was killed. And the woman made it through, as did the two children. But when she got home, she had never written a check. She didn't know if they owned their own home. She didn't know where their bank was or where her husband kept all the receipts or anything.
Just one of those situations where one partner had done all the finance stuff,
right,
and the other one just hadn't. Yeah. Right.
And so she got help and figured it out. But to be under stress with losing some. And then the second thing that happened was I had so many people come to me and say, our parents are getting old and we don't know what their finances are. How do we approach this? Well, this book became the conduit, the first book did, of helping them approach their parents. They would give it to their parents, for example, and they'd say, let's look at this together. And now the second book.
I think the part of that, right, is it feels so emotional.
Yes.
Right? It feels so personal, emotional, especially in that child-parent relationship.
Yes.
You know, asking your parents, what are your finances? That's
right.
Something that when you're a younger person, you would kind of never do.
Right.
Often.
Well, now that 12 years or so have gone by since we started working on this, maybe 13 years in my life, a lot more of my friends' parents have died.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we started on this, I was just beginning to see that around me. And one of my parents had died at that time. But, one of the other things that we should mention somewhere in here, since at the time we started talking about it, it was a somewhat new thing to write out what your wishes were, because there was just beginning to be kind of an awareness.
That idea of a living will
and those things were
just starting to be talked about. Yeah.
Debilitated, you could just get stuck in an ICU somewhere and just be breathing through a tube and urinating through a tube and eating through a tube, and they could keep you going that way for a long, long time. And if that's what you want, then that's fine. But if people really understand that, they would probably choose to do something else with the end of their life.
Yeah, because it's not like a TV show. You know, you see the TV show, somebody has a heart attack and they hit him a couple times with paddles and they're able to get up and walk out. But in real life, it doesn't always happen that way. Because first off, when they press, compress your chest and they hit you with paddles, sometimes you come back okay, but many times you do not, especially as you get older.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are real choices to be made, especially if for somebody with cancer. I mean, you could choose to live the best life you can to the end, or you could choose to just let somebody else make a bunch of decisions for you and die retching with your hair falling out in great pain just because you didn't think through what the possibilities were.
So what are some of the things that you are – what are some of the ways you approach those issues in the book? How did you kind of organize how you went about helping people wade through those issues?
Well, first I think that we need to tell them that why. Why is it important to do this? And so the book is broken into chapters. It's a very thin book, as you notice. It's about 40 pages long because people don't like big, long books anymore on this subject. And there's little vignettes in there about stories that people told me or told Hal and that talk about what this is about. And one story was this man – I changed the names, of course. He was a man who was in his 70s, as I recall, and he had cancer and he'd gone through all of the treatments and everything, had come out of it, and in 5 years the cancer was back. And so he didn't want to go through it again. He wanted to be able to enjoy his family. His family said, no, you've got to fight, Dad. You got to fight. And his one daughter flew in, and she said, oh, Dad, you've just got to do it. So he was convinced, and he died in the hospital after they started treatment after a couple weeks. And he in pain. And,
yeah.
And never saw that end. And so we just felt that that type of thing, stories, should be included in this book. And so Hal came out and he said, Virginia, we've just got to do another chapter. We got to do another book. So we included a couple of chapters. One is one was this one on as you get older. One is how to organize your house if you're taking care of somebody. And one is what happens when you die.
We had what we called the shock of medical bad news. And we could only briefly touch on this. And in fact, I had a whole bunch of ideas in my mind when we started that chapter, but I don't know how to tell a family. What happens over and over and over again is the poor person who's sick and dying has something he or she wants, but then family members start going crazy, not wanting to let go of the person they remember and making all these demands, and things get sidetracked. And this happened with a friend of mine recently within the last year. I watched a friend – that's not exactly what happened, but I watched a friend of mine just kind of get stuck in the ICU, and it was hard to make decisions. So anyway, all we could do is just
it's such an interesting thing, isn't it? And it's such an interesting point of time because you can imagine what's happening with family members, right? Is that they feel this person is compromised right now, and maybe isn't making the right decisions that they normally would make, and so setting those things in front. While you're not compromised, while you're in great health, while you're not under stress, and letting people know, oh, no, this is the way I would want to do it
thing. I've just heard this over and over from social workers and physicians. What often happens is somebody flies in from out of town, and this is what's happened in my – I've seen this in my family. It hasn't been part of the discussion and says, oh, no, those of you who've been here doing this are doing it all wrong. Here's my new plan. Yeah. We're going to uproot this person and take him or her to a spiritual healer in New Zealand or something. And just this extreme pressure to do things that are wrongheaded.
Which we can – every family has their own rhythm. And so when we say that, that's from our perspective. And so the thing is that with a family is what we are encouraging is that they share ideas early.
And
start talking early.
The other thing that we're encouraging is to let the person who's sick make the decisions. I mean, that's what.
What you're saying, in a way, what I hear you're saying is there's no right decision and no wrong decision.
Right.
There's just the decision that the person would make if they were able to express what they want to do in a way.
Well,
that
I think the way you judge the right decision and the wrong decision in the moment is what the person wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from painful experience that after the death, you look back and you just think, oh, I should have done that better, or that was a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, I think the only arbiter is what does this person want?
And you have, as part of this book, it looks like there's a place for personal records, kind of almost structured as almost a workbook in a way, way to kind of –
Well, here again from experience, I think we know that when you're trying to write the obituary, when you're trying to get the death certificates lined up, when you're trying to contact everybody that needs contacting, it's so much nicer if you have it all in one place.
Yeah.
And so what we're trying to get people to do is is put their computer passwords, which are, you know, kind of a dicey thing to be leave laying around, but put some record of the insurance if there have been if there has been arrangements already with the mortuary. The people who are making the arrangement, they're dealing with the body right now, need to know that stuff. And then when you're it's hard enough to write an obituary, but if you don't have any information about where the person went to school, or you can't remember this stuff, that becomes a lot harder.
Yeah. Well, and there's monetary things. I mean, like Social Security has to be notified right away. Otherwise, they ding you as far as interest from the date the person dies. Also, when you have a retirement schedule coming in, or retirement money coming in from the state or from wherever, it's the same thing. You have to notify them right away. Also, if you have investments, you need to notify them right away, because they count that you get a step up of value in your investments a lot of times, especially with your house. That if a person dies, you get a better value on your house if you ever need to sell it. There's all these little things that by being able to respond rapidly, you protect yourself and your family.
Even mm-hmm. such little unimportant things relatively as air miles. Different airlines have different rules. But if you get right on top of that, often you can transfer those air miles and use them for something useful, which is something that becomes really important often after somebody died.
Oh, yeah. I did that with my family. My husband had 7 kids. I'm a second extended family. And they all, of course, were not all in only one was in the state of Alaska. And so I collected all of Bob's air miles. I called him right away, and Alaska sent him over, and I brought all the kids up.
Yeah, that's and uh-huh. what a comfort that was at that
it
moment.
Was.
Yeah,
it
the,
was amazing.
The ability to do that.
But
yeah.
Not only for me, but for them.
Yeah, but that just points out how you need to be prepared at that moment.
Right.
If you realize this all 6 months later, you've missed a lot of opportunities.
And it seems like so much of what it is just making sure that you approach it from a sort of rational perspective instead of that sort of overly personal, emotional perspective. Mm-hmm. Take the awkwardness out of bringing it up with loved ones. Take the awkwardness out of that by – and maybe this book is a great tool to do that with, you know, using the book in order to – sort of say, hey, this is just something we need to take care of. Let's make sure both of us know where this is, right. Or hey, mom, dad, let's make sure this is all in one place.
Yeah. Well, and I put my book in with my cookbooks. Now, I'll have to move it now because I've told that on the air. But but anyway, I figured nobody would look there. Yeah. I've talked to other people that have put it like in the freezer, put it in a plastic bag and stick it in the freezer.
Yeah.
And so they just let their family know. Other ones who have children close by or far away will mail their book to their children.
Yeah.
And there's 2 books in each book. And so you can figure out, you know, do 2 of them, or your husband can do one and you can do one. And so there's lots of ways that you can keep this book private and separate and special.
Well, where can people find the book?
We just got them.
Okay.
So, we are going to have a book signing on Saturday, tomorrow.
Yep.
At Hearthside from 2 to 4. There will be some there. Their books are just now coming in. We got a small group in right now, and so they could call hell.
Is this Hearthside the new Hearthside location downtown?
No, it's the one out there.
Out in the valley.
Yeah.
Okay, the one in the Mendenhall Mall. Nugget Mall, sorry.
Yeah. When we had them before, people could buy them through our website. We don't have our website set up that way. And we sold some that way. But most people that bought them in town, I think, got them from Hearthside in the past.
Okay.
And we're a little bit disorganized this time, because you think, having been through these books before, we would know what to do. But we haven't really thought through what we're going to do with them besides just Hearthside.
And they could always call me. Jenny Palmer. I don't mind them calling me. They could call me, leave me a message, and I would get a book for them.
Well, but I know in the past, people got them in town through financial advisors. I know Valley Medical bought a bunch of our books when we published them the first time, and I hope they gave them out. Some other physicians had them, some lawyers.
Great.
And financial planners have. I know Merrill Lynch did.
And then a great time to meet both of you and talk to you about this stuff. Forget the book is going to be tomorrow. That's tomorrow at Hearthside Books out at the Nugget Mall. When does it start?
At 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock.
2 to 4. And I guess they're going to have some little snacks there for
you. All right.
Oh, good. I didn't know that.
Well, there you go. Now you'll definitely show up.
Yeah. Right. Well, Andy, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, Hal, Jenny, thanks so much for coming in. It's a wonderful sounding book and a really great tool for people to kind of do this stuff that we all have to deal with at a certain point. It's
better we're leaving you your own copy.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Coming up next, here's Bird Note.